Life on the Lane. I'm glad you could join us today. Spring in the Ozarks has been fading slowly into summer. And this season, more than any other, I noticed a few changes. In particular, I've had my own story of sister wives right here on the farm. It began by noticing that polygamy is all around us. God may have told man to cleave to one wife, but the animal world definitely did not get the memo. Tomcats leisurely stroll from one home to another to get their groove on. A dog is equally carefree, something even the pet breeders are unashamed to utilize. They have only one or two sires in a harem. The spring birds have a slightly more respectable pattern. They just change partners with a new season. And only the rarities of Earth's creatures, the swans with their life mates, give us pause and allow us to wonder for a moment at the miraculous nature of true love. Here in my chicken yard, it's a different story. The lord and master of the flock is never short of admiring ladies-in-waiting. To be fair, he seems to give equal attention to all of the girls, but really, how close can you be if you share only a 20th of yourself? A human wife would surely feel the lack. But not so the chicken. She sings to herself among the grasses, idly pecking at the odd bug or a stray seed, content with the rooster's role as protector, strolling with her sister hens, settling for the night wing to wing with the flock, unconcerned about her moral fiber or female independence. My hobby flock of fowl consists of 5 largish buff Orpingtons, they're the good egg layers, 12 white and black silkies, they remind me of my childhood farm days, and 2 Polish representatives that were added for pure entertainment. The silkies, now they're petite, with little downy feathers that form a crown on their heads. They have full bloomers around their thighs, and decorative accents on their little blue-skinned feet. From behind, they resemble fat women of yesteryear, kind of a white-skirted girth supported on ridiculously tiny ankles. Silkies croon incessantly. They are eager brooders, and they are hands down the sweethearts of the yard. The uninitiated may scoff at the notion of feeling a bond with such a lowly bird. The popular website My Pet Chicken would disagree. They cite numerous breeds that love their human caretakers. My own girls, Gimpy, Bobblehead, and Sweetie, stand out in my mind. Gimpy is by far the tiniest of all the hens. She has blue-black feathers and a lame leg from jumping off too great of a height when she was a chick. A white silky is her constant companion, who has a bizarre habit of wobbling her head from side to side as she walks, which my kids claim make her look like a bobblehead toy. And then there's Sweetie, always following you around the yard, hopeful of a pet or a treat. When we began our flock, we hoped for a few farm-fresh eggs to add to our family table, and the buffs did not disappoint. However, the silkies, with their pastel peewee eggs, work every bit as hard as the big girls do to produce, so we cannot slight their efforts. We get just over 12 eggs each week, which is all I had hoped for. For our first year of poultry farming, everything was in balance. And then suddenly, it wasn't. This spring was the first opportunity for my girls to sit on their own clutch of eggs. Like so many first-time parents in nature, they just knew what to do. Gimpy claimed a corner of the henhouse with 3 marvelously tiny eggs, and my husband, who is decidedly not made of firm farmer material, said, "Oh, let her try to hatch them." Even my 7-year-old son echoed his father, "Come on, let the poor little thing have 'em." And I caved. The hopeful mother sat and sat, and we did not intrude on her maternal exercise, It wasn't until nearly a week had gone by that we all began to notice a serious decline in egg production of the entire flock. Yet only one hen was sitting on eggs. Curious, I inspected the nest boxes for signs of a predator or a tragic accident. Coming to the end of the nesting boxes, Gimpy gazed placidly in my direction. My eyes traveled to the straw beneath her. Creamy glimpses of shell peeked beneath her plumage. Rather a lot for such a small chicken, I thought. I lifted her a few inches from the nest. 23 eggs met my sight. Big ones, small ones, brown ones, white ones, all massed into a pile that her tiny body could not possibly cover. I put her down, horrified and confused at how this situation came to be. With two small children as my constant spectators, I couldn't throw any of the eggs away. We must not teach a lesson that life is to be tossed out like trash, any life. And yet, there was no way to tell which of the original three eggs were hers. And the little hen was not physically capable of keeping each egg warm and turning it some 80 times a day. I silently cursed my husband for his soft-hearted surrender. Our coop was at full capacity. We could not accept any more full-sized chickens. Certainly not 23. I returned to the house, agonizing over what to do with a nest full of failed hatchlings, and puzzling as to how the hens had managed to all lay in Gimpy's nest and nowhere else. Only a day or two later, in a quiet moment, I observed the mother-to-be after the other hens had departed the coop for the day. She carefully rose from her nest, or rather stepped down from her throne of eggs, and casually stepped along the nesting boxes, peering into each one. A large, warm Buff's egg resided in the end box, freshly laid. I watched her, incredulous, as she curved her beak around that egg and rolled it against her neck, scooping it from the straw and rolling it slowly, tediously down the lane of nesting boxes. I could not believe my eyes, and yet here it was, proof that my darling little chicken was a kleptomaniac. She had stolen outright all those other eggs and added them to her own stash. I stopped her just short of reaching her nest and confiscated her ill-gotten gains. And as there was no way to discern which of her current hoard was most recent, I took a black marker and put a strike across each eggshell that she had claimed. Now at least we could retrieve the current day's eggs as being the unmarked ones. Still, how was she to incubate them without assistance? We contemplated a heat lamp, but surely that would make the hen herself overheat. A heating pad beneath the nest? Too dangerous. And here is the moment where I began to see the advantages of polygamy. Trotting up the hen house ramp, Bobblehead, Gimpy's constant companion, sauntered over to her friend and serenely sat down beside her. Together they settled their two small selves, distributing their fluff across the entire mass of eggs, and they proceeded to set on that nest for the next 2 weeks. I checked on them 4 and 5 times in a day, certain that they would take a sudden violent hatred of each other. Nope, they patiently waited together, the ebony down blending with the ivory, a couple of surrogate mothers who had not a care in the world as to which child might be their biological offspring. My family marveled at this fantastic friendship and speculated on the mothering styles that might surface. And all at once, there were 3 new baby chicks hatched. Granted, only one appeared to be a rightful descendant of the eager mother, but she didn't seem to notice. The distressing thing was that with the 3 successful hatchlings, Gimpy felt her job was complete. She abandoned the nest full of unhatched eggs. She simply got up, coaxed her trio of children to the other end of the hen house, and set up camp there. and Bobblehead followed her. Surely it did not take two hens to raise three chicks. I picked up the white faker and placed her back on the nest. She determinedly headed back to her friend. We placed a wire between the nest and the new chicks, placing Bobblehead on the nest side. She paced along the barrier like a prisoner, frantic to get back to her instant family. Just as I despaired once again, wondering what to do with these 20 remaining eggs, a third savior arrived. Calmly walking up the henhouse ramp, Sweetie stepped in. She surveyed the situation, glanced casually at the co-mothers, and promptly sat down on the eggs. Her sister hens were not disturbed in the slightest by her occupation of their former territory, and she settled into her role as if she had come home to find dinner already made, and all she had to do was sit down and eat it. I was now forced to wait an unspecified amount of time for any new arrivals. Normally, I could count 21 days from a hen beginning to sit and have an approximate due date. But with the stolen eggs factor, I had to add an additional 7 days at least. It turned out to be 8. Sweetie's adopted eggs began to hatch, 2 a day, until she had 9 lovely babies, none of which resembled her in the slightest. We praised her parenting instincts, applauded her generous nature, and felt our hopes plummet once again as she, too, abandoned the nest. She relocated her brood to another area of the henhouse, and I stared into the quickly cooling nest of 9, deserted for the second time. Half-heartedly, I looked about for another volunteer mother, but it was clear that there was no one else to finish hatching those eggs. No one but myself. Yes, I took those eggs. I placed them lovingly on a bed of pine shavings in the house. I arranged a heat lamp to warm them. I added a water dish to produce humidity. I took their temperature every hour and turned them routinely. I watched and waited and warned the children that it probably wouldn't work. I secretly wished I could sprout feathers to give them the environment nature required. I cursed my husband again for starting this whole chicken nesting mess. And I hatched 3 of them. There were several weeks of assimilation as we tried to get the chicks from 3 separate hatching sessions to mingle with some fiercely protective mother hens. A buff entertained hopes of adopting the orphans for a while, and the rooster pretended he had nothing whatever to do with the whole business. But eventually, we managed to have 1 big happy flock again. I cannot recall witnessing a phenomenon like that of my sister wives. Not only did they selflessly mother those eggs, they clearly helped one another, perceiving the plight of an overextended friend, and moving in to assist. I watched more carefully their daily interaction with one another, their attentiveness to calling out when a treasure was discovered, the unified gathering at end of day for their evening processional, and even the comfort of one who sat close by for days without food or water, as another inexplicably sickened and died. I thought how much the female species could learn from these humble feathered friends. In all, we birthed 17 chicks. It took 3 hens and a human to do it, and we lost a couple along the way, but I considered it a respectable result. As penance for his weakness, David had to build a mobile pen for the chicks until they were old enough to be added to the general population. I keep threatening to thin the flock, but no one is really fooled. Little Red, Mohawk, and Molly are already making their mark. You know what they say, once you start naming things, they're yours forever. We can always put an addition onto the chicken coop. But I swear, next year, nobody is going to be allowed to hatch any eggs, including me.